Check, check. All right, it's now time for our main speaker. Please welcome Todd from Laguna Hills.
Hello, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Todd. It's by God's grace, Alcoholics Anonymous, strong sponsorship. I've been clean and sober since April 29th, 1983. And for that, I'm forever grateful. Yeah, I just celebrated 42 years and in the trenches of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not a part-time member. I've been active the whole time. And my home group's a Monday Night Bellflower Big Book group, like you heard earlier. That's to me where I stood up as a newcomer. That's where I got a sponsor. And I've been a regular attendee of that meeting all these years. And there's a lot more people with more time than me there. And it's been a good stead. There's a little over 300 people there every week and over 100 on Zoom. And, you know, I'm a proud member of that group, you know, and it's kept me in good stead. I'm going to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like today. I want to thank the guys that came to support me. I also want to thank, I think it was Greg that asked me to share, right? All right. Thank you, buddy. He texted me like 5 times, I think, close to it, but it was good. It's good to be reassured. You know, I know what that's like. I'm currently a secretary of a meeting, so he's like, you want to make sure people show up. And so that's good to do your commitment. And but any case, I'm going to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. And thank you for having me, and the warm, you know, greeting and the enthusiasm, you know, getting a chip for every month of sobriety, except no birthdays. I feel a little shortchanged here, but I'm hopeful that next week you'll have a birthday. And but in any case, you know, in a general way, I'm going to tell you, I grew up in Torrance, South Bay area. My parents were married over 50 years until my father passed away. And then I have two younger sisters that are 4 or 5 years younger than me. They were snitches. And, you know, they're still shady to this day. You know, they're well into their alcoholism. My one sister just barely recovered from cirrhosis of the liver. And I don't know if you've ever seen what that looks like, but, you know, with the tube in the mouth, and it's just, you know, you don't know if she's going to come out of it. And luckily she's been able to come out of it and still recovering, you know, but doesn't want to admit she's an alcoholic. And, you know, and that's hard, but I'm just her big brother. I love them no matter what. You know, I'll always be there for them. They know we're Alcoholics Anonymous, what it's done for my life. They've seen the parties that I've had, you know, they see the way I live. So it's just, you know, I hope one day they can come here and feel welcome like I did. I didn't become an alcoholic because of my parents or my family or where I grew up. I became an alcoholic because I like to drink. I like to get drunk. I love what it describes in the doctor's opinion. Men and women essentially drink for the effect produced by alcohol. That was me to the key. You know, I love the effect produced by alcohol. And my first drunk was at a party where people were twice my age. And this guy said, Todd, if you want something to drink, just go over there and get in line. And I did. And this guy saw a willing applicant. And, you know, he grabbed this tube with the funnel line end of it. And he says, all right, try this. And my first drink resulted beer bonging. And you drink a few of those, you'll feel the effect. And it was on, man. I loved everything that alcohol did for me that night. I couldn't wait to have more. You know, obviously, I don't know how to stop. I ended up passing out drunk in a garage and came to the next morning and found out how to get rid of that hangover by taking a morning drink. And it was on. I don't know if I crossed over an invisible line, but I couldn't wait to drink again. I loved everything that alcohol did for me. And I, you know, I'm not a social butterfly. You know, I'm not, you know, I'm not working the room, none of that stuff. I knew about social distancing way before it came popular. I was always good at pushing people away. And, you know, but drinking, that was something I loved that experience. And I couldn't wait to do it again. And I didn't instantly become an alcoholic, but, you know, it starts out gradual. And then, and you know, you become a weekend warrior. And then, you know, before you know it, it's got you. You know, you got to have it. You got to have that ease and comfort from that first drink. And you chase it, and you overshoot the mark, and you don't want to overshoot the mark, you know. And, you know, but it was on, man. I didn't know how to stop. I did not know how to stop. And, you know, I didn't instantly find trouble, but I found out what a pair of bolt cutters could do. And that's how I supported myself. You know, I became a thief. I loved it. It was flexible hours, work at your own pace. I got to wear black all the time, you know, and work at night. I never had a boss over my shoulder. You know, so I was doing all the midnight auto thievery stuff, and anything that, you know, had a lock on it, I was, you know, clipping it with, you know, the bolt cutters at night. And I was pawning stuff off. I was doing a lot of, you know, I was the only guy in the neighborhood that had an Asteroids machine. That kind of dates me a little bit, but it's an arcade machine, if you're kind of wondering. I thought it would look good in my garage. And my father was a cross-country truck driver, so I didn't have a lot of adult supervision. So it was obviously my mom could never control me or what I was doing. But so I kind of, you know, I was doing a lot of things that were shady. And I loved sports growing up. I loved all that stuff, you know, baseball, football, you name it. But drinking became more important. You know, once I found that drink and found out where the parties were and what was going on, you know, I couldn't wait to, you know, to get drunk that night and obviously overshoot the mark. And when I was stealing out there, I was able to get a driver's license for my, you know, I got a car from my uncle. It was a 70 L Camino Chevrolet that was lowered in the front, big white tires in the back. And, it had a 454 dual, you know, carb. It was a classic muscle car. And, 1970 was the only year they made that body style. And he got me this car because I was really close to him. And I always looked up to my uncle, and, he was like passing it on. Like, this is perfect for you. And he didn't know I was already well into the stages of alcoholism, but he loved his nephew, you know, and he did this as a favor. And he says, man, well, you know, I want to share good things about this car with you. And, the problem is I drink and drive, you know. Once I got that car, there was plenty of drive through dairies that would just, you know, you give them money, tell them what you want to drink, and they hand it to you. They don't card you or, you know, ask you how old you are. And, I'm drinking almost every day now. And, I'm one of those guys that hits parked cars, you know, and, you can lie about it, but for me, I never left a note on your windshield saying, call me. You know, I usually got the crowbar out of the back seat and bend the right front fender back, and I took off. And, I was doing that kind of stuff, you know. And, and then I got in two major accidents one week, and I went through an intersection and took a VW bug completely off. And my car was still running, and I saw the guy was okay. So I took off, and it became instantly a hit and run. And then 3 days later, I hit a white pickup truck. And I remember this clearly because, both times I took off, you know, and so I had two hit and runs on me, and, you know, the cops obviously can come to my house and find me, but I'm now staying at other people's homes, and I'm making sure I don't go home. And, and that car, it finally died of alcoholism, you know, and, it wouldn't run no more. And, I left it in a park somewhere, and, but I eventually got it back when I got sober. But in any case, now I'm stealing bicycles, skateboards. I didn't live far from the beach, so there was a lot of victims, and or they just, you know, didn't know how to protect their stuff. And but in any case, that I'm a taker now. I'm a guy that, you know, you cannot trust. I know what it's like to look over your shoulder for people you burned. I was the type of guy that would steal $20 from you, then help you look for it. You know, that kind of stuff. And I was just doing a lot of shady stuff. I couldn't hold a job for my life. And I tried to do the carnations on, you know, selling carnations on the corner. And as soon as I got 20 bucks, I got enough to drink. I left the bucket. And, you know, because I'm going to go pimp some beer. And, you know, I'm just going to get something inside my system to, you know, start the day. And it's just, I just wasn't a trustworthy kid anymore. And, you know, I was a high school dropout into the high school where people were just like me. We had long hair, you know, concert t-shirts, Holy Levi's, and Vans tennis shoes. And we walked around saying, "What's up?" or "What's up, dude?" And then after a while, we just gave each other head nods like that. And that's how we were communicating, man. That's like, it's a code signal, man. And, you know, and as soon as I learned how to use the triple beam scale, I was good. And, you know, and it didn't take long to learn that. So if you're wondering, but so I was progressing as my drinking went along. I didn't specialize. I took whatever I could. I wasn't eating three meals a day. So I was starting to lose weight, you know, from drinking every day. I couldn't hold a part-time job for any, if the life tended to depend on. I tried to tell, you know, I did a lot of things, man, busboy, you name it. And I just could not stay there long enough to, you know, as soon as I got paid, I went and got drunk and never went back to work. And it just, I went into 7-Eleven and I didn't have any money. And for some reason, those microwave burritos looked really good. I was loaded. I couldn't tell you what I was on, but for some reason I thought, you know what, I need to have one of them burritos. And so I stick it in, you know, the microwave thinking the guy's not going to hear the bell ring. The bell rings. I grab that burrito. I stick it down my pants, you know, and I'm loaded, right? So I'm not thinking too straight, but I know I got to get out of the store. And I get up to the counter. And granted, I got a teardrop coming out of my eye because it's burning me, you know. But the guy was like this the whole time, looking at me at one of the big giant round mirrors I never noticed. And he's like, "What's wrong with you, man?" That's the first time that's what you call a blow it. I had to reach down my pants and hand it back to him like that. And I didn't like that, you know, and that was demoralizing. And I'm not a fast runner. And I know I got to run before the cops come. And, you know, I was hungry, you know, and moral of that story is stick to frozen foods. And I know there's some good meat boosters out there. But in any case, that, you know, I didn't have any money. I'd run into Alpha Beta, which is aging me a little bit, but because you don't see Alpha Betas anymore. But I would run in there and grab a case and run out, you know. And sometimes they'd chase me and I'd drop it and keep going, you know. And but that, you know, that was a beer run for me, you know. I never thought about having a car running outside the doors, and I've seen that now, and I've cheered those people on. You can make it, man. You can make it. I never thought about that, man. Have a car waiting for you. And but anyhow, they're still doing beer runs. You know, so my life is just spiraling out of control. My family doesn't know where I'm at. I'm not coming home. You know, I'm living somewhere else, and usually the park or somebody's garage. And, you know, mentally, physically, I was getting beat up. You know, I know what it's like to be so drunk where you got to hold yourself up on a chain link fence. You know, you can't defend yourself. I'm one of those guys that's got stitches and scars all over my body, just from doing stupid stuff. And and it's not like you wake up one day and say, "Oh boy, let's go to AA." You know, because this was never a thought. You know, wanting to come here or try to stop drinking. You know, it just wasn't a thought. You know, I thought I could control and enjoy my drinking. And that's the, you know, the phenomenon of cravings, what I never understood. You know, once I have that drink in my system, I can't stop. I don't know how to stop, you know, and I can't tell you what's going to happen. I don't know where I'm going to end up, you know, and, all those, failures to appear turn into warrants. And, you know, that's the only way my family knew where I was. You know, I went to a gal got killed by a drunk driver in my school, and I was a high school dropout already, but I knew her. And so I went to the funeral, and you know, whenever somebody, either a wedding or somebody died, you celebrated, right? Well, I went to this funeral, you know, drunk, and I didn't know all the proceeds were going towards Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. In lieu of flowers, they wanted the money to go there. And here I am standing out like a sore thumb, drunk at this funeral. And, you know, and I was demoralized. I didn't know. I mean, I was, like I said, I was the guy you always asked to leave, you know, and if I showed up, because I'm insanely drunk most of the time. You know, I'm the guy that ruins Thanksgiving. I'm the guy that ruins Christmas because I'm a taker. I don't know how to give. I don't know how to give unconditionally. Love is not part of my vocabulary. If love could have got me sober, I would have got here sooner. You know, my family loved me, but they could not help me. They could not help me. And that's what people have a hard time understanding that. And, you know, and like I said, I got down to 120 pounds. My eyes were sunken in. I remember looking in the mirror and I was just like, this, you know, I know what it's like to feel like, you know, you're a loser, man. And it's tattooed on my forehead. And I just did not know how to get out of that cycle. And my old man came home on a weekend trip and he knew he had to try something on me. And he just said, hey, let me take you somewhere. And by this time I ruined the house. I, you know, caused a lot of headaches for my family with court dates and, you know, being sued, you know, just, you know, destroying their house that when they were gone, stuff like that. And it just, you know, I didn't know if he could help me or not, but he dropped me off at this place called Doctor's Hospital Lakewood. It's a food court now, but, at the time it was a place for people under 21 to get sober. And, I did not know if I would stay there or not. You know, I really didn't, you know, they put me in a room with funny PJs on and then they gave me the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I wasn't reading books that big, you know, so, I just, when they gave it to me, it's like, great, you know, I'm not going to cuddle up next to it. You know, and, but I did write my sobriety date in it and I still have that book to this day, but, you know, not knowing that I would be sticking around. But at the time, it didn't excite me. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I did not want to be here. My first meeting was Old Thursday's Club in Sunset Beach, old bar that's converted into a meeting hall that's recently got bought by the AA members, you know, a couple of years ago. And I give that place credit because it wasn't my first time to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been to meetings where I just wouldn't stand up or let him, you know, look anybody in the eye. But it was the first time that I give this place acknowledgement because I did stand up and I said, I'm Todd, I'm an alcoholic. And people didn't care how old I was, where I'd been, what I did. They just were glad to see me, you know, and I was always being asked to leave. So this was an eye opener. And it's like, I'm sure a lot of, if you're new, you got welcomed by somebody here tonight. And with this kind of energy and enthusiasm, that's where you find that, you know, it's like, and I found that in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I saw people that were happy, joyous, and free. They were laughing. They were smiling. They were wearing their sobriety. And I didn't know if I was going to stay, you know, and I was like demoralized. I was hitting bottom. And I know what it's like to be powerless, you know, and not know, have any friendly direction, not know where to turn. And you know, this guy tried to hug me and I wasn't into the touching game. And I didn't know it was unconditional love. I still have that street mentality where I just, hey, man, easy. And, you know, and so I was like, but I know today it was unconditional love. They cared about me enough to let me be me and, you know, give me their phone number. And they didn't want nothing from me. They just wanted me to stay sober. And the next night I went to the Monday Night Bellflower Big Book group, which I told you I still go to this day. And I met this guy named Big Todd. Big Todd was 300 pounds. And then I met Classic Todd. And when I got sober, everyone had nicknames. So that's why I'm throwing these nicknames out. Yeah. But his Classic Todd was 350 pounds. And these guys were corn fed, you know, and they're big boys. And, you know, and the reason I mentioned their name, because when I was drinking, I never ran into I never ran into another Todd at a party, but I go to, you know, my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's three of us. And me only being 120 pounds, I got stuck with Little Todd, you know, and, you know, because everyone had a nickname, you know, and, you know, I was like, great. I, you know, unfortunately today I'm the only Todd and, I'm a little bit bigger, and I've grown a little bit, and but that comes with age as well. But in any case, these guys spoon fed me Alcoholics Anonymous. They were happy I was there. They were just glad to see me. Big Todd started taking me through the steps. You know, there's a reason why I did a fourth and fifth step. It qualifies me to receive one. And, you know, these guys cared more about my life than my feelings. It, you know, there was, yeah, there was no teddy bears or any of that stuff. It was just, you know, you want to stay sober, do what we do. And, you know, and they cared enough, you know, to let me go through my own pain. They said I had to get a job. And I still had a driver's license, but I didn't know what, you know, I'm a high school dropout. Who's going to hire me? You know, I didn't know what to do. And they kept saying, well, you need to be self-supporting. You need to get a job, man. And I said, all right. And I ended up getting a job for a repossession company. You know, they said I had some skills they could use. And I knew how to steal cars. I was always good at working with my hands. And but people in AA did not like that, man. And they frowned on the fact that I was out there repossessing, because a few of you had your cars repossessed. And I said, I'll let you know if we're coming, man. And, you know, but if I went to your house for a potluck, you're like, watch that guy. He's a thief, you know. But after the meet, if you locked your keys in your car, where's Todd? We need him, you know. And, yeah, it's not worth it. You know, I get a slap on the back. Thanks, Todd. And, but in any case, yeah, I was confused. I didn't change overnight just because I got sober. You know, this was a gradual, there's no race here of sobriety. You know, this AA works really slow. You know, drinking works fast, but AA works really slow. And sometimes, you know, you can miss that. And, you know, because you get smart, we get king, you know, you want to know why you have a sponsor? I heard it tonight, you know, so you don't torture yourself with good ideas, you know, and, right, Grant? And, yeah. And, you know, that's why we got sponsors, so we don't torture ourselves with good ideas, because you do not change overnight just because you get sober. You got to work the steps, and they gradually work, and they change, and you surrender. And, you know, I did that job for a year and a half stealing cars. I loved it because I had a lot of – I was young. I had a lot of energy. You know, it was progressive. I don't know if there's any car thieves out there, but I just love driving your car when you don't know it. You know, it's an adrenaline rush. Not everyone can do it, because trust me, I'd bring newcomers with me. They'd stay in the car. No, man, I can't do that. And, I just, for some reason, I was an adrenaline junkie, and I finally had to surrender that job, not by choice, but because a police officer caught me on a scene. I was in a Mustang. It was a stick. I was trying to put it in neutral and grab the emergency brake. Those kind of hand gestures made it look like I was going for a weapon. And that officer put his, you know, revolver right to my forehead and said, freeze. And that's when I knew it was unhealthy for my sobriety, you know. And I had a newfound, you know, willingness to change, and called my sponsor up, and, you know, 3 a.m. Hey, man, this is what happened. I'm sorry. And, you know, and those surrenders were good for me, because it made me willing to change and ask for help. I quit torturing myself with good ideas, and I started asking people in AA for help. And classic Todd actually got me a job as a forklift mechanic at a rental yard. You know, these guys helped me open up my first checking account. You know, that these guys helped me get an apartment so I could, you know, stay sober with some other guys. And, you know, they just kind of, they just walked me through it, you know, and I slowly started to grow up here. And, when I was 2 years sober, my sponsor said, I've given you everything I can give you. You know, it's time to give it away. And I knew what he was trying to say. He's like, go find a newcomer, you know. And then he got really harsh with me. He said, look, man, I don't want to talk to you till you have a newcomer. And I thought, well, that's kind of harsh. And, you know, but, it, you know, the Monday night meet has a break like you guys had here. And I knew where the newcomers were, where they stood up. And I went to the back of the room before they ran off. And I said, look, there was three guys, you know, they were all sitting together. I said, all right, which one of you guys want to stay sober? One guy raised his hand out of three. I said, oh, that's pretty good odds. And then I looked at them. There was something wrong with them. But I tried to overlook it. And I was forced into doing this. I, you know, go talk to a newcomer, get one, you know. And I didn't want to do it. You know, I just started wearing a collared shirt. So I was just, you know, I was just starting to change. And this guy had piercing everywhere, different color hair. None of that bothered me. Just wearing shorts, no shoes. That didn't bother me. It was the twitching, man. He kept doing this. And I go, what's wrong with you? And he goes, I need a sponsor. And I straight out told him, man, I don't think you're what I'm looking for. I didn't think I wanted to take that on, man. And but all I could think about was I needed credit, man. And my sponsor wouldn't talk to me unless I had a newcomer. And that was the only reason why I did it. And I said, do you need a ride home? And he goes, yes. And when I took him home, he said, do you want to go to me tomorrow night? He goes, yes, I'll pick you up. I may not have known what the message was, but I knew where the meetings were. I knew who the old timers were. I knew where to go to, you know, go to meetings. I knew how to take this guy and take him to meetings. And I wasn't loving and caring in my first, you know, while we were building this relationship. This guy was pale white. I took him to Barstow to watch him burn, man. And, you know, I wasn't going to give him any bullfrog. And that's lotion, in case you're wondering. And, you know, sunblock. But the old timers, thank God for them, man, because we're losing them by, you know, quite a bit here lately. And, you know, giants of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had great teachers. I still have great teachers in my life. But these guys pulled me off to the side, and especially this guy, Don Pila, because he always would say, AA works, AA works good. And he said, look, man, show the guy how to work the steps, you know? And when I heard this guy's fifth step, it changed everything about me. I started caring for another human being that I did not want to care for, but we did the same thing. We had alcoholism. We, you know, we did the same thing. We just had a different appearance. You know, and it was the start. I've been sponsoring guys ever since. And I've never stopped since I was 2 years sober. You want to know why I'm 42 years sober? Because I still sponsor people today, you know, and I encourage that with everybody in this room. And if you want to stick around here long term, man, try to help somebody. The moment you can get out of self and start giving, you will change, you know. And if you're coming to AA to get something, you're missing it completely. There's only opportunity to get you to give. And serve, you know. That's why they offer commitments for you guys to grab. You know, because those things will keep you in good stead. That'll keep you, you know, caring for other people and getting to know each other. It's a process, and it's a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous you don't want to miss, you know. And it's kept me in good stead all these years. You know, I wasn't no rocket to stardom. You know, I took everything slowly, you know, I got a job at McDonnell Douglas when they were hiring 50,000 people as an aircraft. All I had to do was pass the screwdriver test and a drug test, and I was hired, you know. Before I knew it, they were teaching me how to read blueprints and be an aircraft mechanic. You know, and I did that job for 12 years, you know, in aerospace. Boeing took over. I worked for them. I helped build the first C-17 military aircraft tanker. I got to see the President of the United States come to my work. Defense secretary, you know, all these people that, you know, I was just a guy showing up. I knew how to show up. That was the difference between being sober and being drunk. Now I knew how to show up and be responsible. And I, you know, AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus. It's in the 12 and 12 if you want to read about it. That happened to me. You know, I met a gal that was sponsoring women. She was active. I was sponsoring guys. We started dating, didn't rush into anything. After 3 years, we got married, had a son. You know, when I was 10 years sober, I was skipping rope, man. I had the house, the toys, the material things. And I forgot where I came from. I wasn't being a good father. I wasn't being a good husband. And I took it all for granted. And before I knew it, I was in a divorce, you know. And I'm not the only guy in AA to go through a divorce. But I know it's like to be in a room full of people and not let anybody know what's going on with you. You know, your ego and pride after you had 10 years sobriety, you don't want to let anybody know what's going on. You know, it's like I ended up going back to pushing people away. I had to make a serious change. I had to make a sponsorship change. You know, a guy saw me come into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 16 years old. And He said, a guy with 10 years sobriety is just as important as a guy with 10 days. You know, and you want to know what his magic words were to me? Do what I do. That's what he said. Do what I do. There wasn't no let's cuddle and hug it out. No, it was just, you know, this is where I'm going to be. Show up, you know. And you know what he told me to do? Rededicate yourself to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to be a coffee maker, be a setup, be a greeter, you know. And I'm not a lovable guy, you know. And, you know, and I did it, man. That's how I got I rededicated myself to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went wherever he went, you know. And you know, this guy was part of my life for almost 42 years. He just recently passed away. He was a great mentor, and he was a giant Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll forever miss him. He'll always be in my heart. You know, his teachings will always be there, and I'll never forget him, you know. And but that's what he did for me, you know. And I didn't, you know, I was angry at AA, being a part-time father, you know, paying child support. I was angry, you know, and I got laid off from Boeing, you know, the second time. And it's like, I did not know what I was going to do. You know, and I ended up getting in construction in the restoration world. And it was a job that I got into on accident, man. I was just doing a sales call, and they, you know, they I went in there with a coat and tie on, and they said, look, we're looking to hire somebody, and he looked like he could fit that part. And I took it on, and I you know, I was chasing fires and water damage and doing all kinds of stuff. I was going to hurricanes after a hurricane would come on the East Coast. They'd drop me in right after that, you know, after it leaves, and I'd be helping people, you know, with insurance claims, you know. And you know what I did whenever I went out of state? I'd always go to the local Lano Club, and you know, and I'd find people there that just lost their home, but they're there rebuilding the Lano Club so the meeting could help, you know, meetings again. You know, those are the people I want to stay sober with, and those are the people that helped me get the layout of the land and the, you know, the fellowship of the community. And, you know, and to this day, I still have friends in those states, you know, as a result of going to meetings wherever I was dropped into. And I've been helping people ever since in that sense. And I get paid for it, and I'm doing all insurance work. But I what I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I apply it to my job. You know, I'm there to be of service. I'm there to help people in time of need. I've seen horrific stuff, man. And, you know, and you know, I've had to wait for the coroner to come in, and you know, stuff like that. And it's just, you never know what you're going to walk into. But I've always taken a calm demeanor and try to be have some compassion. You know, that's what I've learned here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've seen people die here, and I've also seen people die on the streets. You know, but I believe that I've been given a gift here of sobriety to share that with everybody. You know, anybody can work a program for an hour and a half. You know, that's no sweat, man. It's, what are you doing when you go out these doors? You know, a guy told me you could be governor of Montana, you know, and I have no political ambitions. You don't have to worry. But what he was trying to tell me is we all know what happens if I go out there and get drunk and loaded. It will not be pretty. You know, the progression of alcoholism will be there full bloom. But we don't know what happens if I stay here and stay sober. You know, good things happen to people if you stay here and stay consistent. Great things can happen. I was offered, when I was laid off, I got offered to do a movie part. I didn't want to do it, but I wasn't doing anything. This guy was a military advisor for a movie. He said, Todd, I need you to play a Secret Service guy. Are you going to say no to that? I didn't, you know, and just, what do I got to do? You just show up, you get a haircut, it's based in 1960, so you're going to look that short hair look every day. And I'd get in the barber chair every day and, you know, go to my set, and I'd be in the background whenever the president had a speaking role. Would, you know, I'd be right there behind him, man. And then one day, this guy had a speaking part and he refused to get a haircut. I'm like, dude, just get in the chair. It ain't that big of a deal, man. We're all doing it, right? And you'll get paid, man. You'll like it. And this guy goes, I got an agent. I got it. He threw all this freaking big giant mess of a fit, right? Well, I don't know if you've seen The Power of a Director. But he got word of this, and he came out and he told this guy in front of 150 people, get the hell off my lot. He didn't say it that nicely. He cussed him out pretty good in front of everybody, made him feel this tall. And he goes, Todd, you'll do a speaking part. And I'm like, how short you want it, man? And, you know, yeah, you know what I said? Yes, Mr. President. And I got a residual check, man. And it's a movie ain't that big of a deal, but hey, I was just standing at the right place at the right time. I was not fighting the system, and good things will happen to you, man. You know, I didn't go become an actor or chase that dream, but it was you never know, man. I could be governor of California, you know, and trust me, I can't do any worse. All right. I'm just sharing out loud, man. And you can take that one back, take it off the tape, whatever you want to do. But I, like I said, I have no political ambition, so I'm not campaigning anything. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I eat, breathe, and sleep it. I told you about my home group. I go to a 12-on-12 workshop. I study the traditions. This is a way of life. This isn't a part-time thing. You know, I told you about that divorce. I saw my ex-wife go out and get drunk, get loaded, and we were raising our son. And, you know, I know what it's like to be a father and watch your son go to jail and you can't do nothing about it. You know, you really feel powerless, you know, when he's being handcuffed and taken away. And I also know what it's like to see him get 10 years sobriety and see a room full of people love on him. And all I did was play his dad. You know, I didn't try to be a sponsor. I just tried to be his father. And I still have that relationship with him today. You know, he just celebrated 10 years and he's doing great, man. He's got his own host of friends. He loves AA. And, you know, I when I told you when my wife, ex-wife went and got drunk and loaded, she was out there a couple of years, and I was, by this time I, you know, bought my own house in Lakewood. I was doing all right. You know, I was financially taking care. I was cleaning up my side of the street. I know, you know, if you want to buy a house, you got to clean up your taxes, just so you, FYI, you know, I had to make amends and do a lot of things, you know, to change. And then you get credit. But in any case, my wife came back, ex-wife, I got to keep saying that, because I'm going to tell you why. She came back and had, you know, she got sober again and got 15 years. When she had this party for 15 years, she asked myself and one of her best friends to share at it. And, you know, at this time, you know, I said good things. I love her. I'm glad she's sober. We raised our son together. I stood just in a room full of people I didn't even know, you know, and her family, most of her family members were in the room. And they, you know what they told her, they said, you know, that's not the same guy you married. And they were right, because I've been staying here, staying sober, cleaning up my side of the street. I changed, you know, I'm not a fast study, but I clean up sometimes, and I, you know, I adapt, and everything I said was from the heart. I wasn't trying to, you know, boost her ego or anybody's ego. I wasn't trying to impress anybody in that room, except the fact that she was sober again. And I was grateful, you know, and her sponsor and her, you know, her mom, you know, they're like, you know, I don't know what happened, but before I knew it, we were having coffee again. And we ended up getting back together after being divorced 18 years. And that's not easy. I know you said, wow, it wasn't easy. There's a lot of skeletons in the closet, but we worked through it. We had a program. We had our sponsor support. And you know, life is changing all the time. And we bought a house here in Laguna Hills. She sold her house. I sold mine. And, you know, we've been opening our home to people in Alcoholics Anonymous the whole time, man. And having parties all the time and, you know, celebrating milestones of sobriety. And, you know, sometimes people knock on your door. You're just like, really? You know, can you go away? And but you got to help them. You got to help them. And the reason I'm sharing this is that my house is open to anybody, you know, and I bring them in. I try to help them. And sometimes they live with me. And I want people to get back on their feet. I want them to enjoy sobriety. I'm doing it for fun and for free. Nobody's paying me to do this. And, you know, and what's that done for me is I have a host of friends that it's unbelievable, you know, just trying to help people stay sober. And, you know, I'm one of those guys that'll answer the phone at 3 a.m. You don't have to try me or challenge me, but if you need help, I will be there for you. My phone is by my bedside. I will hear it. And I want to help you stay sober. I don't want you to drink. You know, we lose more people than we should. If everyone stayed sober, came to AA, we'd have meetings at the Coliseum or Angel Stadium. We lose more people than we should. You know, COVID was a perfect example of that. Not everybody came back. you know, and there's still people out there that are just, you know, they don't want to come back. And I understand that. But those of us that are here, we got to help the people that are here, you know, that want it and want to live sober and want to live free and be happy. And these are all things that I enjoy life to the fullest, man. I am not a glum lot today. You know, like I said, I eat, breathe, and sleep AA, and it's a way of life. And some of you may not even understand or comprehend that, and that's okay. But I'm here to show you and help you understand that AA works, and it works good. You know, it's just like Don Pila used to tell me. And with that said, I hope all of you can stay sober another day and get what I've found here. It's a great life. Thank you very much.